right?
Okay, today is, November 17th, maybe?
17th.
Yeah, excellent. 2015, this is the first interview with Lamar Campbell. We are here at his office inside Camp Randall, sort of. My name is Troy Reeves. I'm with the UW Mass Oral History Program. I know you go by Soup, Lamar, so
yes.
I may interchange. But
that's fine.
If you wouldn't mind saying your name and spelling your last name.
No problem. Lamar Campbell, L-A-M-A-R, last name Campbell, C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L.
Excellent. And actually, this is recording just great, so I'm going to turn it down a touch. Okay, so the first question is a very broad question. Let you answer it however you want, and it's pretty simple. You know, why? How did you end up at UW?
Now, UW was a very unique choice for me, coming from where I came from in Philadelphia, Southwest Philadelphia. I didn't play football for a full season until my senior year of high school. I dabbled with it. I was more of a track runner as well. And one of the things I think that brought me, one of the things I know that brought me to Madison is I had an opportunity to switch schools my junior year. My school, because of lack of funding, shut down. So I was part of Philadelphia, Archdiocese of Philadelphia School District. Mm-hmm. And at that time, those parochial schools were running out of money. Philadelphia's K-12 education program was something not to be admired in those years. And it was really a whirlwind for me. My family had attempted to, you know, put me in the best situation to be successful, regardless of my surroundings. Growing up in Chester, Pennsylvania, Southwest Philadelphia, you know, right now, one of the highest murder rates in the country per capita, 1 out of 30. So far this year in 2015, we've had over 20 murders. So it's very difficult. You know, it's funny, in my graduation year, my mother showed me a picture of my second grade class. And the old picture where they just had the square photos in them. Mm-hmm. And there were only three of the bold males in that classroom that either were not dead or not in jail. Okay. Out of 14 of us. So three of us had made it to our senior year of high school unscathed by the community. And when I went to Strathaven, which was a school I ended up graduating from in Haverford, PA, it's funny because a stone's throw from where I was, but night and day. The demographic, the community, the education. You know, I remember when I got to Strathaven, I was surprised how clean the books were and that they had all of their pages. Mm-hmm. When I got there, mm-hmm. You know, I was used to books that, outdated books, books that did not have pages, just not the same type of schooling system. And playing football there, you know, they already had a good football team. I by no means came in and turned the program around. They had been district champions when I had got there. They had went undefeated the year before, and it was just an opportunity. So I decided to try out and ended up playing linebacker. It was about 5'9", 145 pounds, but they had guys on their team that were established, had played in that program for a long time, and what they were able to do was find a place for me to get in and play. And the first time that I caught a pass in the game, I took it 95 yards for a touchdown. And coach says, "Can you do that every time because you touch the ball?" I say, "Yeah, sure. just make sure you keep my grandmother off my behind so that I'm getting good grades. I'll score as many touchdowns as you want me to." Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the beginning, really, of a dedicated football career. And during that senior year, we happened to play against the number one offensive lineman in the country. Now, at this time, I really didn't know what college would be like. Mm-hmm. There was talks of HBCUs just because of my surroundings, Howard, Virginia State, Virginia Union. I never knew a scholarship for football was in my future. Just so happened that that game we played the number one offensive lineman. A lot of football coaches were there, and I ended up having a pretty good game. 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, a lot of tackles. And then the phone started ringing. I'll never forget the first phone call. Came from a coach, and I'll never forget my mother coming into my room and asking me what I did. I said, "What do you mean?" She's like, "Who's this coach calling here for you? What did you do?" I said, I didn't do anything. She said, "Well, I hung up on him. You need to tell me what you did before he called back." And it ended up being a coach from Villanova, local school there. Mm-hmm. But he was at the game, and he wanted to know if I would like to come up for a visit. So that was my first official recruiting phone call, and the call started to come in. And, Wisconsin came into the picture fairly early. Temple, who has a pretty good program now, was not pretty good in those days. And I used to get cards from Temple that said, do you want to play as a freshman? Come to Temple. Mm-hmm. But I knew that I always wanted to get away from home. And something that's also important, and sometimes I kind of forget about this, and I actually mentioned it to one of my students the other day in class. There's a program called the Upward Bound Program. Mm-hmm. Run through colleges. There are some that's actually run through here in Madison as well. And they bring inner city minorities, youth to their college campuses, and you go there for the summer. You go there, you read books, you learn vocabulary words, you stay in the dorms. So you somewhat get accustomed to life on a college campus. My Upward Bound program was at Swarthmore College, actually in the same district as my high school, Strathaven, which played part of the puzzle as far as me going to Strathaven, because I was somewhat familiar with that area. Mm-hmm. Had some friends that went to that school as well that I had from the Upward Bound program, and that was really just very instinctive to me. And I was a track guy. So at St. James, before we closed down, we had won the states. We had won a Catholic League title. We were very fast. We were all Americans. And we all wanted to stay together as a track team. Mm-hmm. Our track coach was very good friends with the Strathaven track coach. So that really played a huge part in us wanting to go there as well. But, you know, football was definitely, you know, not on my radar as far as a means to go to college. It was definitely going to be a track opportunity. Mm-hmm. And then Wisconsin called, and Michigan State called, and Virginia Tech called, and Florida called. And, you know, as someone that had never been recruited before, my family was somewhat new to it, how the process worked, what questions to ask. A lot of these coaches and recruiters would come to the high school to meet me at lunch, talk to me at lunch, tell me about the school at lunch. This one coach from Pennsylvania, who happens to be the athletic director here now, Coach Alvarez, worked with Jim Huber, who recruited me, offensive line coach here, great offensive line coach here. Called me on Wisconsin had just went to Michigan State to earn their first Rose Bowl berth. They had just came back from Tokyo, I'm sorry, to play and beat Michigan State for that. Mm-hmm. They said they were coming to see me. So like most of the schools, I figured they were coming to see me at school. Coach Alvarez, Coach Bill Callahan, who was a head coach for the Raiders and mm-hmm. now offensive line coach for the Redskins and made the Dallas Cowboys offensive line what they are now. Brad Childress, offensive coordinator for the Philadelphia Eagles and Kansas City for a time. And they came to my neighborhood. They actually came to my house. And that was something that no coach had ever done before. And I'm not ashamed of saying I lived in a very bad neighborhood. The projects, as most people would say. The drug dealers on the corners, prostitutes on the other corner, and a very long blacktop. And it just so happened that the helicopter was out looking for someone that night that Coach Alvarez came. And Coach Alvarez came in his Cadillac and his suit with Brad Childress and Coach Callahan, and he came to the neighborhood and said, "I'm looking for soup." And they showed him where my house was, and he came in the house and sat on the couch, and it was me, my grandmother, my aunts, who are all educators, teachers, mm-hmm. Asking great questions. And this was old school now. This was the plastic on the couch still days. my grandmother was old school. Mm-hmm. And he didn't make me any promises. He told me they were building something special. He told me that I had an opportunity to be a part of that, that he thought that I could help them be great. Mm-hmm. And I really always loved challenges. In our community, loyalty is huge, where I came from. And I think the respect factor that he was the only coach that had the courage, I'll say it rather than another word, to come to my house and actually sit down and tell my parents what he thought I could do for him at university, and that he could get me a degree. And that would be one of my best decisions I could make in my life. And after that visit, I shut down all the rest of my recruiting, and I committed to Wisconsin.
So, I mean, it sounds like you had, even though you grew up in the projects, as you said,
yep.
you had a support system
yes.
of folks
yes.
who wanted you to succeed.
Yes.
You want to talk a little bit more about them?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't have a lot of money. But as a kid, you never knew it. That was one of those situations. You know, that was the community that we were in. They always did their best to try to keep me out of the streets. They always knew that the drugs were there, the crime was there, but they all wanted better for me. I was the eldest grandchild at that time, so it was me, five aunts and a grandfather. So they had me around. I was the oldest until I was 9 years old. So they were very protective of me, still are in some ways. But that's just that, you know, that just really speaks to the family atmosphere that I think is important for all students and all student athletes to have that support system there. They were very strict, but we had fun. They did what they could every Christmas. They did what they could in the holidays. They made sure that I saw things outside of my community. And it was huge, you know, for me. My oldest brother was a drug dealer. He was an idol of mine. and that was something that, you know, as a young man, you don't understand the aspect of that world. You just see the flash. You see him able to have money and have a car and have his own place and have things. And unfortunately, a lot of times in those type of communities, that's what you only see. You don't see the doctors. You don't see the lawyers. The teachers were respectable. You know, you knew a police officer that maybe the family had known. But other than sports, and I hate to sound like a cliche, but other than drugs and athletics, you really didn't see a lot of success there. You know, you were the man if you were one of the best ball players, football or basketball, in the city. Or you were the man if you were one of the biggest drug dealers in the city. And as a young man coming up, they didn't push me to that, but it kind of drew you in anyway, no matter how often they tried to steer you away from it. My brother's no longer with us. My brother was murdered my junior year here in Wisconsin. He never let me dabble in that world. He felt as though that was his path, that was not my path. And for me, that was huge, you know, a junior here. And it was, you know, I looked up to him as far as, you know, I owed him for trying to keep me out of that lifestyle and making sure that I had what I needed and my family had making sure that I had what I needed to make sure that I could be successful. And lost him to a drug deal. Murder. You know, and this was 1997, maybe 96, 97 when he passed away. And I don't have many regrets in my life. I think what I regret the most is, and why I'm so passionate about what I do now, is that I didn't have anyone to go to. I felt like if I went to my coaches, then that would be their perception of me. I felt like if I went to anywhere, that it would say, you know, maybe Soup's one of those guys. Maybe that would ruin my chances. And I didn't make my brother's funeral. We didn't have the money to fly me home. And I was scared to ask the university to do it based on being afraid that maybe something would happen. This was a huge opportunity for me. I had never really been in football. I had really never understood. I was just playing a game that I loved and going to school, so I never understood the implications or opportunities that were there for me for them to help me. And I'm not saying that they wouldn't have helped me if I would have approached them. But I regret not even being afraid to ask them if they could help me go home to visit my brother's funeral. And all I could do was write a letter. And I don't have many regrets in my life, but I do regret not being there for my brother's funeral.
Well, there's so many things I could ask off of that. But I do want to, I might get back to that, because I think it's important to talk about what you do here, based on, you know, that experience you had. But you also said that you're, at least I think you said your aunts or aunts were educators.
Educators, yep, teachers.
So having, I mean, you knew nothing else. You had your aunts were educators, but how, upon reflection, how much you think that helped you not only become a good athlete, but also a good student?
You know, I wasn't a great student. I had them around to push me. I think I did the work to do it. Academics was always huge. I was never a F student. I never got Fs and I never got Ds. But I got A's through C's. But what I realized now that I'm older is that it depended on the class. It was where my interest level was. Mm-hmm. I was interested in science. I was interested in history. I was interested in music. A's, A's, A's. Mm-hmm. Math, B or C. Mm-hmm. Physics, a B or a C. You know, they really weren't my passions. But I always studied hard. It was always a regimen. From when I was 5 years old, it was come home, do your homework. You could watch cartoons once Oprah went off. There was only one TV in the house mm-hmm. back then. Mm-hmm. Then Oprah went off. And then my youngest aunt would come in. And then American Bandstand would come on. And so and I was very excited as a kid when two TVs came in the house so I could watch my cartoons. And then before night, I had to read before I went to bed. That was a strict routine as far mm-hmm. back as I can remember. That was every day from mm-hmm. 5 until I got to high school. Obviously, when I started playing sports or being involved in sports, those things change. But the regimen for taking care of your business first, mm-hmm. taking care of academics first, was always ingrained in me early on. The academics were going to be huge. And when you have an aunt coming in, like my grandmother's house is definitely the matriarch of our family. So everybody came by there before they went to their own home. So they would leave work, they would come by my grandmother's house, and then they would go home. But then mm-hmm. you have 4 or 5 aunts coming in, asking if you did your homework, what's going on in school. You kind of had to be prepared. So it made you just want to work a little harder, make sure mm-hmm. you can answer their questions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's kind of how it was ingrained in me, the importance mm-hmm. of education. And as hard as they tried, I really still don't think I got it. You know, I really don't think it seeped in. You know, you think you know everything as a teenager. I was a typical teenager. I wanted to be out with my friends. I wanted to be out in the community. And, you know, as you get older, you get wiser. And I think that's everyone. And what I've learned is I think the reach of how you reach these young men and women on the importance of education is just as important as telling them that mm-hmm. education is important.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because it sounds like you had a support system telling you that education was important, and you knew it was, but it was really only the classes that clicked in your brain.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That those were the classes that you...
That were important to me.
Yeah, they were important to you, and it showed right. your grades.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So... I think, I mean, I reserve the right to sort of come back to this stuff, but I want to move us along a little bit here.
All right.
So, when Coach Alvarez and the other coaches came, was that like the spring of your senior year?
That was the winter. That was in February. I mean, November or December. It was before the Rose Bowl.
Oh, right, right. So they came so after right after, State, after before the Rose Bowl.
Right, so it had to be sometime in December.
Okay.
After Thanksgiving when they came.
Okay. So at that point, you knew you were coming here.
Yeah, when they walked out the house, I knew I was coming there.
So do you recall the first time you actually arrived here?
Coming from Philadelphia,
yeah.
I remember like it was yesterday. We were all packed up. My family is big on road trips. We have a little bit of Clark Griswold in us. and we packed up a van, and we drove from South Philly to Madison. And at the time, we practiced at the seminary here in Madison. We didn't practice here on campus. We went up to the seminary, and they dropped me off at the seminary. And that was, gave our hug, gave our byes. We went and got something to eat. And then they were off. They headed back home, stopped at Six Flags somewhere. And, mm-hmm. Oh, they stopped at in Ohio, Cedar Point.
Oh, right, right.
They stopped at Cedar Point. They stopped at Cedar Point and went back to Philadelphia. And those were before the cell phones. And it was 2 pay phones there. You had to wait in line to get on a pay phone. And you had to call, collect, and things mm-hmm. of that nature. You know, it's funny, I don't really remember the road trip, but I do remember my first night in the seminary, meeting all the other freshmen, mm-hmm. Seeing all the other upperclassmen who were huge to me, coming as a smaller high school guy. Mm-hmm. So it was huge for me. I think my first camp was amazing just because I think the camaraderie, best friend. I just happened to be roomed with, in Pennsylvania, they have a game called the Big 33. And in the Big 33, you take the best 33 players from Ohio against the best 33 players in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened, my roommate in camp was Kevin Huntley, who was on the Big 33 for the Ohio team. And we had played each other that summer in that game. And it's funny because they read you off the roster. They announce you. And it's all these great names that Ohio State. Kevin Huntley, Wisconsin. Then they go to our side, the Pennsylvania side, and it's Penn State, Lamar Campbell, Wisconsin. And then you walk on the field and you have to go across and shake hands. And it just, and everything happens for a reason. And we literally were standing across from each other. I mean, we went to go shake hands. We shook hands, gave each other a hug. And he said, listen, we're going to Wisconsin together. Let's show them what Badgers can do. And then, ironically, when I get to camp, who's my roommate? Kevin Huntley's my roommate and like family to me now, like brothers. We talk almost every day.
That's great.
Yeah.
So I wonder, you know, having that great experience with a great roommate, but I'm wondering if there were any pangs, any of wanting to get back, like any homesickness or anything like that when you first got here.
You know, I think for me, because I was playing as a true freshman, was pacifying, I guess is the right word. When I came on my recruiting visit here, you know, I saw all the minorities, I saw all the African Americans. I went to Strathaven, I went to Swarthmore. I knew that I would be a minority. That really wasn't an issue. When I saw it firsthand, how huge a college campus is and how much of a minority it was, it kind of clicked. It didn't make me feel bad. It didn't make me feel homesick, but it didn't make me aware. Like, this is going to be the next 4 years of my life. There were microaggressions that I did deal with when I was here. I had people wanting to touch my skin who had never seen a black person before in my dorm. Just different experiences that you don't experience coming from Southwest Philadelphia, where the minority is the majority.
Right.
You know, so for me, and it's funny, a lot of my team classmates and teammates, were African American, grew up in suburban places. I was really the only city kid in my class. I think they helped me along a lot, because I had that brotherhood, I had that friendship. I never really felt alone because I had that surrounding and comforting group of guys. I had the silo of being a football player and being around the guys all the time. But sometimes, you know, I would walk in campus, I would not see another minority face going back and forth to class some days. You know, I think that didn't, you know, I'm not going to say the word bother. I don't think that's the right word. But kind of like, wow, you know, I did ask myself at one point my freshman year, did I make the right decision? You know, am I going to feel comfortable here? You know, is this going to be, are they going to understand me? It was more of a, not putting on anybody else, it was more of a, would they understand me? But I wouldn't change my 4 years in Madison, you know, for anything. I think I became more cultured. I think my experience was a lot more diverse. I left Madison being able to feel comfortable in any room that I walked in, any culture, any food, any music. I felt as though I really grew my 4 years here, and I wonder what my experience would have been like if I had not went to a diverse school where I had to. I would say Madison is the most diverse school, but for minorities, it's very diverse. If you're a minority coming to Madison, you have to learn and assimilate to certain things. You have no choice but to learn different cultures and different music and how to articulate yourself to different people. And that was a learning process. And some of my great relationships, business and personal, have come from that. But I do think at the end of the day, we lack, admission-wise, in those days. We do a lot better now than we did, but it was very rare to see a lot of minorities on campus in Madison.
Yeah. And I think we're going to get to that, too, at least if not tomorrow, maybe if we do one more about, you know, now coming back to Madison,
right,
what you see.
Mm-hmm.
So you played as a freshman. What was your class load like that first year?
Oh, man. Let's just say my first semester in Madison is something that I would say was very challenging. And because I had got through in high school, I thought I could do the same here. And of course, love was very difficult being a student athlete. It's very, very difficult. It's not to say that a regular student doesn't have the same kind of workload, but I challenge them to try ours any day. And for 4 or 5 years, and, you know, consider and still keep the grades that they have, especially if you're not really prepared for that workload. I mean, Wisconsin's a top-rate university. Mm-hmm. You know, back in my day, you had to get a 700 on your SAT, and you had to have a 2.0. And you were good. You know, I think my SAT score was an 1150 or 1160. I had about a 2.7 GPA average, so I wasn't scared of the academics here or intimidated by the academics here. But I think the workload and I think the balance, and I think that's really more than anything when I tell incoming freshmen that your time management and your balance will be the most important thing you learn your first semester, because that's going to help you get on track for the next 4 or 5 years. You have to manage your time very wisely. You don't have time to do a lot of other things that other students do. But you also want the same college experience, and they don't get to do a lot of things that we get to do as athletes as well. But it's very time demanding. And I think something that the NCAA has worked on, they've gotten a lot better at. But that first semester for me, I was barely out of probation. Barely a 1, maybe a 1.8. I still have my dogs hanging up around my place. You know, I don't know if we'll get to this, but I came back to finish my last 12. Right. Last semester, and in all honesty, it was my first semester that I came back to finish. If I'd have got the right grades my first semester, I would have finished in 4 years being a student athlete. Mm-hmm. When I left for the NFL, there was those 12 credits that first year, those classes that I bombed, is really what I came back to finish.
So, could you help whoever ends up listening to this? And you've alluded to it here, but I wonder if you could talk about during football season, mm-hmm. particularly that freshman year, but it could be just overall. What was a typical day like for you?
Typical day was like I had a meeting with John Detman, who was our strength coach. And when I say meeting, it meant workout session at 5 a.m., which means you were usually up around 4:15, 4:30. We worked out pretty extensively. You were there from 5 to 8 maybe. You would go get breakfast. And you had a condensed class schedule. You went from class from the 9:50 to 8:50 usually, to 8:50 to 10 o'clock. Usually you had a 10:15, a 12, a 12 to a 2. And then you were right back at the practice facility around 2:15 getting taped up. Getting ready to go to practice. You were at practice from 2:30 to mostly 5:30. Being here the entire time. And then after 5:30, you had film till about 6:30. And then if you had homework, you tried to get it done at that time. And if you had paper, you tried to get it done at that time. So that left us about 3 to 4 hours to try to get things done before we had to go back to sleep and get ready for the next day to do the exact same thing.
It sounds exhausting.
Yes. Yeah. It's very exhausting, but I think you find a resiliency in these kids. You know, people ask me why I'm always here at 5 a.m. because it's ingrained in me mm-hmm. to be up and ready to go at 5 a.m. So once you get used to it, once it becomes your normal schedule, your body will adjust. Mm-hmm. But to say that you don't have days where you just want to crash. You know, I had an off conversation with an advisor the other day, and a student-athlete missed a class one morning. And, you know, why did he miss class? I said, well, he just missed class. That's not as simple as just missing class. Like, first off, look, you have to look. It's so much more that goes into that. Mm-hmm. If you're doing this for 7 or 8 weeks, and I've been there, and I have an A-B in a class. I'm doing well in a class. And it's the 8 o'clock in the morning class. And I'm struggling. I've had 3 papers due. I've had midterms. I've had football. I've had whatever other things going on. And I look at myself and I feel my body shutting down. I say, you know, I have a good grade in this class. I think I'm just going to stay in bed for another hour, mm-hmm. or I won't be able to perform at practice today mm-hmm. to get ready for a game. So it's mm-hmm. between a rock and a hard place. Right. What do you do? Do you go to practice and not play well and not be prepared for Saturday? Because you a lot of times the student athletes come in, they have a responsibility to their sport, and they feel as though that's their only responsibility is to their sport. And sometimes they forget to have a responsibility to themselves to make sure that they're taking care of their bodies and their minds and their academics. But it's hard to say that to a 17, 18-year-old kid who's happy to have a scholarship, happy to be going to school for free, being able to not put that burden on their parents. You know, it's a lot of responsibilities that go through these young men and women's head. And I try to explain that to the advisors. Like, it's never as simple as just they're just not going to class. You have to look at the broader scope of things. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's something that the good advisors know. You know, it's never that big a deal. Like, you have to look at those facts. If a kid misses a class, the first thing that I will look for is, what's his grade in that class? Okay, and then what's his schedule? You're going to have an outlier here and there who just didn't want to go to class or wanted to cut off. I'm not saying that all these kids miss classes for good reasons. Mm-hmm. But 9 times out of 10, I will say that this just the strain of the everyday, they don't get days off. You know, they need just some time to rest up and get ready for the rest of their week mm-hmm. because their sport is important to them. You know, these things are important to them. So when they have these opportunities to get an extra hour or get something extra to eat, you know, mm-hmm. they want to be able to do that because it's going to lead to their performance for the rest of the week and the rest of the year.
Right. I mean, the student-athlete, to me anyway, I'm not a student, never was a student-athlete, but you're pushing yourself, truly pushing yourself mentally and physically.
Right.
And so sometimes it might be you need a mental break. Sometimes it might be you need a physical break.
Exactly.
I guess.
Like, exactly.
Just I mean, even though these are kids, the idea of them getting out of bed isn't easy, I would have
to
think.
It isn't easy. I mean, you know, a lot of these students work their way through school, and I have respect for those students as well, too. A lot of students are here. A lot of students are working their way through school. The demands of their job, I would put up against the demands of a student athlete any day. Mm-hmm. Any day. And I respect them working, And I'm not saying they're working hard. But the physical and mental demands, I don't think are the same as a student athlete's mm-hmm. physical mm-hmm. and mental demands on a day-in, day-out basis year-round.
Right. So, Sue, there's one thing I wanted to get back to from the previous question. And so you just talked about the fact that today's students have a support structure.
Yes.
They have advisors. They have you. Mm-hmm. They have others. They, of course, have their coaches. What sort of support structure outside of the coaches, you know, did you have, you know, if you were feeling mm-hmm. like you needed to miss a class or whatever? What sort of support structure did that student athlete have in the 90s?
You really didn't have any back then. I don't think that the trend. It was more of, you know, a lot of us were happy to be here. A lot of us took our scholarship and shut up. It didn't want to call or make any waves. Mm-hmm. I think the University of Wisconsin has been in the forefront of making those things available. And I'm not just saying that because I'm here. I've traveled to a lot of universities in my entrepreneurship realm prior to coming back here. And we're definitely heads and tails above more where most schools are now, as far as the staff we have, as far as what we offer. But we didn't have a sports psychologist, someone I could go to and say, my brother was murdered. I need to just get it off my chest. Mm-hmm. What do I do? You had coaches that you trusted. You had coaches that you didn't feel comfortable speaking with. But you really didn't have the services. And it's funny that I talk about that now, and I encourage my students to this, like, you have to know what you have available to yourself as well, too. Mm-hmm. Because as far as I know, there could have been on-campus psychologists. There could have been on-campus health mm-hmm. help for me to get through that difficult time or get through those difficult times. But I didn't know about them. My silo was here in the stadium. This was my comfort zone. This is where I was. I didn't really know all the other things that were going on campus. So mm-hmm. I don't know if those opportunities were there available. They could have well been there for me for free, and I just didn't know about them. So I encourage my students now to make sure that they have skin in the game and they're doing their legwork to make sure what they know is available to them mm-hmm. because you don't want to miss out on something that can really help you out.
Mm-hmm. So do you have a memory, I'm sure you do, but maybe sort of the strongest memory of freshman year in terms of being on the field?
Yeah, my first game I started was the Hall of Fame Bowl in Tampa, Florida. First time my family has saw me play that year. It was a first start as a true freshman. I've worked hard at a lot of practices, but I think Coach Huber and Coach Hayes, Jim Huber and Coach Jay Hayes, who's now with the Cincinnati Bengals, worked me that practice more than I have ever worked. I mean, I was starting, and I never forget, Coach Huber came in and said, you know who Troy Vincent is? You know, Troy went to Trenton, played here, vice president of NFL operations now. And I remember saying to Coach, I said, Coach, you know, am I ready? You know, am I talented enough? You know, am I going to be okay? He said, you know what, Troy Vincent asked me that same question before he was a number five pick in the draft when he was a freshman. I was like, wow, really? Like, Troy, you know, even he had that moment where he wasn't sure. Mm-hmm. Went out, started that game. I'll never forget my grandfather who passed away. At the time, it was huge for us to get out of our neighborhood, for someone to even make it to college, let alone play sports at a big division program. And I never forget it when they announced the starting lineups and they show it on TV in your hometown, that he started crying. I never forget he told me that. He said, when I saw your name, I started crying because no one had ever made it there to that level at that time. And that to me was huge. So I was playing for more than Wisconsin. I was playing, you know, I tell guys all the time, you know, you play for, you know, you not only play for the school, but you play for the name on the back of your jersey as well. You play for your family. You play for the people that helped you get here. You play for the people that helped you stay here. Mm-hmm. You play for all the people in your life that helped you get to this moment. So when you put that name on the back of your jersey and you put that W on your helmet, it's so much bigger than yourself. And I think for me, starting that game and not only playing well, but having an interception and winning that game, that was definitely my biggest moment on the field as a freshman that year.
Mm-hmm. So then after that, so spring semester when you're not playing football, what is that like?
The spring semester, freshman year, just any
year. Years. But yeah,
it's a lot different. I mean, you're still practicing. You're not practicing as much. You're still working out. You're still doing running and lifting until spring football, which is March or April. You get back on the field and you're practicing a couple of times a week. It's an opportunity to catch up on your classes, maybe take some classes that are a little more difficult because you have more time to study. You have more time to yourself. But your time off is limited. I mean, you come here and you're here in August. You don't go home for Thanksgiving. Our bowl game was on New Year's Day, so you didn't go home for Christmas break. You went home right after the bowl game. You were back in a week and a half. You were going through school in February. You get spring break, but you know, for most of us, you're still here, either working out, traveling. You don't travel much. And then you get 2 weeks off before you have to come back for summer school and work out. So all together in a calendar year, for kids like myself that live far away, you're maybe home a month and a half out of the year, all put together with all those weeks combined. And I think the spring is fun. I'm not going to say Madison is a great town now. The spring is fun. The nights are great. The lake, playing basketball at the lake and just relaxing is great. And I think you get to see more people. You get to experience more things in the spring because your schedule is not as condensed. And you get to experience what you just accomplished. You know, I know for me, it was funny. We were coming back from class, me and a couple of classmates, and we were walking by the bookstore. And it had my jersey and all three of our jerseys hanging in the window for sale. And our conversation was about what we were going to eat that night. Mm-hmm. What were we going to do for dinner that night? Right, we had to get something to eat.
Right.
And it's funny, we didn't think of anything of it back then. But now when I tell that story, and now with all the talk of, you know, pay for play and things of that nature, mm-hmm. you know, it's funny that's been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm a history nerd. You know, the first intercollegiate athletic event was a sponsored event, and that was rowing. Mm-hmm. So the business of sports can never be separated because they were born together. But I also think that we were so just happy to be here that we don't look at a lot of today's athletes. I mean, Friday Night Lights are now on ESPN. You can watch high school football on ESPN now. A lot of these kids are a lot more aware mm-hmm. of the business of the sport. But with that knowledge, I also tell these kids come responsibility. So if you understand that it's a business, then you also understand the importance of education. So you can't run a business without having your education. So if you look at it as a win-win, you know, school's going to bring in money while I'm going to be here, then you have to take advantage of that situation. Mm-hmm. So regardless of what mindset you look at it from, it's still an opportunity for you to better yourself in 4 or 5 years. Regardless, you're here now. Mm-hmm. So what are you going to do with it? Okay, you know what? I want to go into business. Maybe I want to make the next level to NHL, NFL, NBA. I need to finish this degree now. So I'm ready for that, so I don't have people telling me what to do. I'm telling them what to do, mm-hmm. and I'm educated. So however you look at it, whether as a business viewpoint or an amateur athlete viewpoint, that still doesn't mean to slack off all your studies and not take advantage mm-hmm. of the situation that you have in front of you.
Mm-hmm. So, Soup, you're telling students that now, but it sounds like you weren't necessarily in that mindset, though, when you were 18, 19 years old.
Not at all. Did not understand the concept. Did not understand we were happy our jerseys were being sold. Now, we weren't thinking about the
right.
the money to get from. We were like, man, look, our jerseys are in the window. Right. That's awesome.
Right. So it's sort of it's like an ego thing, right?
Yeah.
Like my jersey's in the...
Well, just knowing that a sense of accomplishment.
Okay, yeah.
Not even really an ego thing, but a sense of accomplishment, like, and more so responsibility. Mm-hmm. Because I'll never forget, we're walking back, we see our jerseys in the window, and we say to each other, we really got a ball next year. Mm. Like, we really want to make sure our jerseys stay in the window. We took it as a challenge. Mm-hmm. Like, not only are they there, we want them to stay there. So that actually made us work harder and made us prepare more diligently mm-hmm. than we did as freshmen.
So when you did get to go back, and I don't know if you thought about this or if it even really mm-hmm. mattered to you, but when you did get to go back home,
right.
was it different coming back home as a college student, a student athlete in this case?
You know, it's different, and I can be very honest about this because I want whoever to listen to this understand these are some of the things that student athletes deal with. A lot of times, they're happy for you when you leave, but they feel as though you're too good for them when you come back. Mm. Oh, you've been on television. You're in college. Oh, you're getting educated. Oh, they're taking care of you. So it's funny, and I can't speak of that for every community. I know in mine. When I left, there was all love. When I came back, there was love and there was hate because of what I was able to accomplish. And I think that's a reality that a lot of people don't look at, you know. And I have educators that have never been athletes. And some of my classes now reiterate the same thing. They're getting their master's or their PhD or their doctorate. And when they go home to their family, it's like, oh, you're too good for us. You're getting educated. You're getting a PhD. You're getting a doctorate. And their question is the same as most recent athletes. What happened? I thought this is what you wanted for me. I thought this is what you wanted mm-hmm. me to aspire to be. And then as you go on that process, you feel as though they're not as supportive as they were when you first left for that process. And that's sports and academics. And I think in life general, you find that as well.
Mm-hmm. And that was something, is that something you've realized upon reflection? Or, I mean, can you really, if you put yourself back at being 18, 19 years old, were you feeling that at that point?
You know, I will say I did feel that for my core group of friends, mm-hmm. the people who I had known the longest, the people that were there for me early on, family, friends, people I went to high school with, they were always very supportive. It was more so the people that, I would say associates or distant family they were happy, but it was a vague kind of happiness, you know, and that was hard to deal with, you know, because I really felt as though, for that I can speak for me personally, I represented them in a way. I was very proud to be from where I was from and to mm-hmm. be doing what I was doing, and I made it very well known where I was from, and I was proud of that community and proud of what the community made for me. So when you feel as though that community doesn't want the same things that you wanted to bring light to, you know, it was a source of power. It was a source of having a voice to come back and say, you know, these are things that need to change in our neighborhood. These are things that need to change in this environment. And having the power to say that, like I was just brought up to always be. It was always bigger than myself. There was always a greater cause for anything that God had blessed me with, and also that my grandparents, my grandmother in particular, always infused in me. It's always bigger than you. It's always bigger than you. You have to think beyond yourself. And that's something you learn to deal with as far as the people there. But I would say it felt good to know that the core group of people mm-hmm. that supported me were always there to support me as well.
Maybe just one or two more things since I got here late. I don't want to take it more than... Actually, I see your watch. Could you tell me what time it is?
It is.
I just want to make sure we get...
Almost 9. 8:59.
All right. Oh, all right. Well, then why don't we... If there's anything on your mind right now particularly about the... your undergraduate time here, particularly that freshman year, maybe the transition from freshman to sophomore. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll end with this question. If you've thought about it or if you remember your memories of being on campus as a sophomore as opposed to being on campus as a freshman.
The memories of being on campus as a sophomore, I was happy to get through my first year. So I had a big smile on my face. To get through the first year, it was good to be back. Camp was different. It was just as hard, but I was used to going to the seminary. I think I was in the process of finding my rhythm of being a student and an athlete as far as getting through. You know, I tell some students all the time, the elective phase and the core classes phase is probably the hardest phase of school because a lot of these things you're just not going to be interested in. And that's what I was getting into, and I don't... feel bad and say I think a lot of students feel that way. I think any student would tell you that there are some classes that you know Brown University, for instance, you only have to take one required course and you pretty much set your entire curriculum. You know, I think that's something a lot of schools should look into as far as their required courses. And the kids come in and they want to but I understand the process of expanding minds and expanding class, because you never know what class may spark you to do something different mm-hmm. in your life. So I do understand that as well. But I think because I knew what I wanted to do, it was kind of a struggle for me. And I got to those history classes my second year, history of civil rights, world history, Russian history. I started to kill it once I got into courses that I loved. So for mm-hmm. me, it was very confident sophomore year because I started to get into more of the classes that I felt interested me.
So maybe just one quick follow up to that then. So you knew as you started to get into college that it was really the humanities or history in this case
yeah.
that really was going to be where you wanted to
yes.
to focus.
Yeah.
And did you know that coming in as a freshman or did you?
I knew that coming in as a freshman. I knew that since my sophomore year in high school when Mr. McCall was the most engaging and inspiring history teacher, and the way that he taught it and the way that he made you realize not only does history repeat itself, but just the hidden history, a lot of things that weren't in the textbooks. He would teach us things like that. I'm like, wow, I never knew that, you know, whether it was the war, whether it was the civil rights movement, whether it was industry, whether it was the Great Depression, just the history within the history that you don't get every day in the textbooks. Mm-hmm. It just made me an inquiry-driven learner. Like, I wanted to know the details of everything. I wanted to know the backdrop of how these things happened and what was really going on in these people's minds. And I knew history. And I grew up an Indiana Jones fan. I wanted to be an archaeologist and a professor. That was my goal. Indiana Jones was my guy coming up. And I knew I wanted to do something in history. Maybe not archaeology, but I knew history was was going to be my wheelhouse for a long time.
Well, Soup, I want to thank you very much for your time today. I appreciate it.
This
concludes the first session with Lamar Soup Campbell.